Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, all you listeners out there, this may be the most important show we've had this year. I want you to listen close. And we've got some very important guests here that I'm going to introduce very shortly after my typical intro. And we're going to talk about the most important question before us in this country today. That most important question is the organizational question. How do we organize to stop what's going on and to move this country into a new direction that will literally save it? Because we are headed for what I call the triple crisis that this country has never faced before. What are the three dimensions of the triple crisis? Well, we know it's economic, don't we? Yeah. 45 million people jobless. Official number 36.5 receiving unemployment benefits. A lot of people in the pipeline not getting unemployment yet. And then they don't say anything about the fact that 8 million people have dropped out of the labor force. And if you've dropped out, you're not getting benefits and you're not included in the unemployment rate, which they said is 14.7. Well, as I recently wrote on my blog, lowballing the unemployment rate, 14.7 is only for full-time workers. We got 50, 60 million people in this country who aren't full-time anymore. They're part-time temp gig contract workers. Yeah, 8 million of them, and they don't count the 8 million. We got about 45 million people unemployed. We've got the worst economic indicators ever on record, collapsing everything, industrial production, retail, you know, services, everything's collapsing. We're going to have a 30% drop in the GDP second quarter rate. I mean, these statistics are off the charts. Yeah, we got an economic crisis. You know, and people don't say much about the fact that we've given the wealthy $15 trillion in tax cuts since 2001. And we spent $7 trillion on wars. Well, no wonder we had a $22 trillion national debt. Oh, now it's going to $30 trillion based upon what's happened here in the recent months in the spending. $30 trillion national debt. And we've only begun. Economic crisis like we've never seen before. We got a health crisis overlaid on top of this. Make no mistake, as I've been saying, the economic crisis was brewing and beginning before the health crisis. All this virus has done is accelerate and deepen the whole process. I'm not going to go over the dimensions of that. We've talked about that on the show before. There's no V-shaped recovery. We're lucky if it's a W-shape, an elongated W-U-shape, worse than 2008-09 that we never really recovered from. Oh, the rich recovered, but we didn't. So we got a health crisis, and we have a political crisis that's been brewing for years and now is accelerating as well. I want to talk with my guest about this political crisis, but first let me say a few things about that dimension. Under Trump, it's been accelerating, but it was here before. It was growing before. You know, in my just published book in January, The Scourge of Neoliberalism, U.S. Economic Policy from Reagan to Trump, I have a chapter about how neoliberalism and its deepening and expanding has pushed the political system into a crisis, has undermined democracy because neoliberal policies cannot continue without a destruction of democracy. party transformations. We no longer have a two-party system. We have a single-party system with two corporate wings. And that's how it should be viewed. The Republicans are now Trump-publicans. Yeah, that transformation occurred here years ago. And the Democrats aren't the Democrats of your fathers and grandfathers. No, they are repo-Democrats, Republican Democrats. And look at the corruption in the electoral process. Money. Yeah, we all know that. Citizens United is just the tip of the iceberg. Remember the Supreme Court selected the president back in 2000? Unprecedented. Nothing in the Constitution gave it the right, but it did. Watch it play another role. Voter suppression, gerrymandering, running rampant everywhere throughout the country, especially in the red states. That's how Trump holds on to the red states, you see. The Electoral College, that anti-democratic, arcane, institutional, disgusting arrangement. And now the Supreme Court is talking about, oh, should we let them, electors, make whatever decision they want? They can vote against the popular. Well, that's being actually discussed, believe it or not. And look, you know, this Electoral College thing, who are the electors? Well, the number of electors is equal to the number of people in Congress, right? And it's apportioned to states according to their population. According to the population and the number of electors, that was established in 1913. Yeah, the U.S. Constitution says we're supposed to adjust the number of seats in the House according to population. There should be more than 435 people in the House, according to population, and most of them should be in the West Coast and the Northeast, you know, where the population centers are, but they're not. Well, that's how Trump holds on to the red states in the Electoral College. Civil liberties, democratic rights, from Patriot Act to the NDAA, chipping away at us every year. Mainstream media, one wing Fox News tells outright lies, lies by commission, and the other wing, the establishment, tells lies by omission. 35,000 lobbyists run around Washington, D.C. They don't represent you and me. Yeah, they call it the swamp. No, it's the swarm. Revolving doors between people in government and big corporations. And now we got this institutional food fight going on between the two wings, one controlling the House and the other controlling the Senate and the executive, and now just about controlling the judiciary as well. The executive encroaching upon the constitutional rights of Congress purposely, ruling by executive order and ruling by executive choice and refusing to, allow the House to engage in what its constitutional described obligations are. And then we have Sanders, who comes on the scene in 2016, tries to reform it with a strategy called inside-outside. In other words, you try to reform the Democratic Party from the inside and block with the progressive wing, and you try to then also push it in a reformist direction from the outside. And he created a movement of young people, largely, and minority people, who are being whacked most than anybody in this country. The millennials and the Gen Zers coming, they are being hit the hardest. I know, I have relatives in that age group. People don't know how bad it is for them, particularly of color, people of color. You know, Latinos and African Americans and Native Americans and others, they're really catching it. So Sanders tries to reform it. And, of course, they outmaneuver him, steal the primaries from him in 2016. Well, okay, you know, we're going to try it one more time. Those who want to engage in this futility of this inside-outside strategy. And they try it again this year. Well, it was stacked against them from the very beginning. you can see that clearly now from the very beginning. You know, the Democrats underwent certain reforms of their party a couple years ago, I believe it was, you know, and they actually strengthened the ability to block anybody that they want. You know, they got all these special delegates in their back pocket that they were prepared to use, who are just party hacks, most of them. If Sanders had gotten enough delegates from the primaries, that was in their back pocket, and new powers to the chair of the Democratic Party to declare some candidate, if they want, not holding the philosophy of the Democratic Party and simply saying you can't run. Yeah, they were ready to pull the plug one way or another. And, you know, they have this primary season where they go after the most conservative, smallest states to give the conservative corporate anointed candidate an advantage. Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina. They pull the plug in South Carolina, right, on Sanders. Yeah, they had it all wrapped up. They ought to just in case. And look, the southern states the Democrats would never win anyway in this next election are the states like Carolina, South Carolina, that determine the outcome of this. Look, you know, the inside-outside strategy just doesn't work. It's proven here right now. And Sanders' grassroots movement is beginning to become aware of this. You know, Sanders says he's going to fight all the way to the convention, and then he quickly throws in the towel. What the hell's going on? Right? Some deal made? Some kind? Why did he throw in a towel? And then he has the nerve to turn around and say, stay in there. Let's fight for the primaries. We want to change the party platform. The party platform, yeah, makes a big difference, sure. It's a sandbox. Fighting for the platform is Sanders' sandbox. It means nothing. It's for the politically naive to keep them engaged in the party. It's a marketing tool. It means nothing. When they get elected, their advisors or corporate advisors tell them what to do and they ignore the platform. We saw that with Obama. It means nothing. And we're supposed to stay in the Democratic Party and try to reform it at the platform level? Look, they're running Joe Biden. Can you believe it? After they run Hillary, they run Joe Biden? What the hell's wrong with that party? Well, I'll tell you what's wrong with it. Money. Money is what's wrong with it. Look, Trump may win. Don't make no mistake about this, you know, because all that matters is the 6 to 8 swing states. And some polls say he's got at least 6 of those 8 swing states. Still, believe it or not. And if he loses, I'm going to predict here, if he loses, he will not accept it. He will not accept even a close loss. He will not accept it. He's already setting it up, I believe, with this mail fraud thing. He's going to claim the mail-in ballots are a fraud, and he won't accept it. And boy, you think we got a political crisis now. You wait till that happens. And if Biden wins, what's going to happen? The same thing as if Trump wins. 2021, big-time austerity. Big time. They're going after Social Security. They're going after education. They're going after more tax cuts for the rich and the corporations. That's what's on the agenda. Well, you know, a lot of folks are beginning to realize this, and they're saying, well, maybe we need a different approach. And that's where I want to bring in my guests here. Two, probably the most important guests I've had on this show so far here, who have been very active in the Sanders campaign, you know, who gave it one more chance here. We've had one of them on before, Nick Brenna, right, who was one of the leading operatives in Sanders' 2016 campaign, but then kind of broke, I believe, and he can clarify that with the Sanders campaign when it became clear with the party reforms here a couple years ago that they've really made the party leadership stronger, In other words, able to take even more drastic moves if they had to. They didn't have to. They sabotaged Sanders in South Carolina and the South thereafter. You know, look, the Democratic Party doesn't have much of a base in the South. You know, it's mostly African-American folks and the better off African-American folks. And they can't deliver those states. Unfortunately, Sanders was not able to mobilize black youth throughout the South. You know, the mobilization of the youth is perhaps a little premature. Sanders began to do that, but hasn't been able to expand it. Well, okay, we got Nick Brana, and Nick's going to join us today. And I think we're waiting on, I don't know if we have Jerry Perez, who's a field director for the Our Revolution group. Our Revolution is the grassroots Sanders mobilizing group. All right. And I guess I'm getting a signal here that Jerry Perez has not joined us yet. We'll see whether he does. Hopefully he does, but he's field director for the Our Revolution group out of Los Angeles, which is broken with the rest of the organization as a harbinger of things to come in that organization probably, and said, well, we got to form our own party. We got to form our own independent political party. And as you know, in this show, I've advocated that. That's the organization question. You know, there has to be an independent political party. You can't rely anymore on the two wings, either wings, of the corporate party of America, whether they're Trump Republicans or Repo Demos. No, you can't rely on them. They won't deliver. The Democrats cannot stop Trump. The Democrats do not have a policy or a strategy to defeat Trump. They are inept. Over the last year or two, we've seen it repeatedly. Different strategies and tactics fail. And they're going to fail in November if they run Biden. They think that there's nowhere else to go. Well, there's got to be somewhere else to go. And maybe 2020 election is too late, but the real crisis is going to be 2022 and 2024, because it's going to get worse, much worse. Okay, I want to introduce Nick. At least we have Nick on here, right? Nick, you there?
Hi, Jack. Yes, I'm here.
How you doing, Nick?
Good to be with you.
Nick, did I introduce you correctly here? What was your role in the Sanders organization, and what are you doing now with the People's Party movement?
I worked for the Democrats for several years, including John Kerry on his PAC and Terry McAuliffe on his gubernatorial campaign in 2013, and then worked for Bernie on his first presidential campaign, lobbying the superdelegates for him, helping him plan the convention, doing political outreach, and then founding Our Revolution with him as a founding staff member.
Okay, and why did you break with that campaign and Bernie, and why are you trying to form a People's Party?
Well, I worked through to the end of the campaign, was one of the last staffers at the convention, went down to about 50 staff, and then helped them found Our Revolution. But then afterwards, like you said, I, rather than kind of continue in the Democratic Party, and I had built up a career for years in the Democratic Party, my experiences on Bernie's 2016 campaign and at Our Revolution made it clear to me that, in fact, the Democratic Party was just as corporate as the Republican Party. And it could not be reformed. And in fact, we need a major new party that doesn't take corporate money.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, what was this, like 2017, 18, that you went independent?
That was 2016. And actually, what happened was that I wasn't even necessarily planning on staying in politics, continuing to work in politics after Bernie's campaign and Our Revolution, because I was so disgusted with the political process and with what I'd seen in the Democratic Party, like the superdelegates willingly choosing Hillary Clinton, even though they knew, a number of them, they knew that she was going to lose. And I would remind them on a daily basis with the polling and other figures showing she was losing the key swing states. And so that was a choice. They chose to lose with Hillary Clinton. It was not like they thought that she could beat Trump. And after that, in 2016, I was planning on leaving politics, but I wrote an article saying that in the Huffington Post, saying that Bernie should found a new party. And because the majority of Americans now want a major new party. It's a 57% majority to 38%. And also the two parties have been dissolving. Independents have grown enormously. And so the millions have been leaving the two parties and becoming independents over the last several years. And the level of confidence in institutions has plummeted across the board in the last 50 years, from 80% trusting government to do the right thing most or all of the time, to 20%, from public schools to all three branches of government, to big business, television news, online news, everything. The people's confidence in all of those institutions that form the bedrock of our society, banks, it's all plummeted to, in some cases, like Congress, to single digits. And so there is a really deep and systemic level of disgust and distrust in the systems that we have, the institutions we have, and particularly these two major parties, which are so corporate controlled. And so that is why I wrote this article saying that Bernie should start a new party, consolidate his 13 million primary voters. There was a poll the day after the election in 2016 that showed that if it had been Bernie against Trump, Bernie would have won by 12 points. And so that economic progressive populist message that he had is clearly enormously popular. And yet he chose to work inside the Democratic Party, you know, and we can talk about how that's gone for the last 4 years. I think you did a good job in your intro. But the response to that article that I wrote was that hundreds of people reached out to me and they said, yes, we need a new party. You know, enough is enough. You know, how can we get this started? How can we sign up? How can we donate? How can we volunteer? And I thought, well, you know, I hadn't really been planning on staying, but there are so many people who, you know, who have reacted so tremendously to this, you know, and offered to put their time and to make it happen. And so I said, okay, it needs to happen. And so I helped found Draft Bernie for a People's Party to encourage him to form a major new party in 2017. We presented Bernie with 50,000 petition signatures. I went on Democracy Now! And invited Bernie to join us in forming a major new party, the major new party that the majority of Americans want. With Cornel West, we invited him to a town hall in September of 2017 at American University. But Bernie decided not to attend, and he decided not to respond either, which was unfortunate, because even if he intended to, and I knew that he intended to run in 2020, and it would have given him more leverage. We saw how Trump, for example, threatened in 2016, you know, if this isn't a fair process, I might run independent. I might not endorse your candidate. That's because that's how politics works. I mean, that's real leverage. Bernie was unfortunately not willing to do that. He was not willing to exert that kind of real leverage against the party. But out of that came the movement for a People's Party, because afterwards our members, more than 50,000 of them, voted to continue organizing for a major new party. And so for the last 3 years, we have been organizing to build that People's Party. And now we've grown to more than 70,000 members. And we have some incredible developments, such as Bernie 2020 co-chair Nina Turner showing her support for the movement. Other Bernie surrogates like Roseanne DeMauro and John Cusack, the actor, also saying that we need a third party now. We need an independent party. And also we have the first Our Revolution group, Our Revolution Los Angeles, you know, of the organization that, of course, Bernie founded, joining the fight for a major new party and calling on all Our Revolution groups across the country to join that fight and help form a major new party. And so this is sending shockwaves across the country and across the progressive movement in terms of what our next steps are going to be. And there's a mass awakening of among Sanders supporters that, in fact, we cannot continue to work inside the Democratic Party, and we have to answer that call of the majority of Americans who want a new party to inspire them to a victory.
Your movement, you say you have 50,000, 70,000 people belonging or supporting, adhering in some way, fashion to this movement for a People's Party. How would you describe it geographically or, you know, in terms of generation or some other characteristics? Is this mostly a youth-driven effort here? You know, as I said before, the millennials, the youth, are really catching in the air more than anybody, and minority as well. You can see this in the death rate here with the virus, right? It's mostly overwhelmingly minorities that are being impacted here with the death rate. You know, what's the composition at this particular point?
You know, it's across the board. It's across the board in terms of age, in terms of race and gender. But I would say, I think you're right, that I think it is that young people are leading the way in this. While it's 57% of Americans who want a major new party, it's 71% of millennials and an even greater number of Gen Z. And so it's young people who are absolutely rejecting this system. And I mean, how could they not? I mean, they've grown up and come of age. I have. I'm 30 years old in a time where, I mean, living from one crisis to the next, from the Great Recession, you know, to this depression and global pandemic. And so it's a catastrophe that we've lived through. It's this kind of, you know, shock doctrine capitalism that Naomi Klein described, just living from crisis to crisis. And working people never recovering after the Great Recession, going down to 80% of Americans living paycheck to paycheck, less than half of Americans having $500 in savings. And now you're going to cut off people's income and you're going to expect them to continue living somehow. You're going to expect them to continue paying rent. You're going to expect them to continue buying food for their families. So you have a travesty at this point of enormous proportions, almost a third of Americans, households with children, are living in food insecurity now in the richest country in the world. So this is an absolute disgrace, and we need to replace these two parties.
Yeah, well, you know, for folks listening, just consider this. How much have they given corporations and investors here with this bailout, right? Oh, well, $2 trillion. $2 trillion for them just in loans and grants. And believe me, the loans will become grants, right? On top of that, you know, almost $1 trillion in tax cuts that they don't talk about much in the mainstream media, do they? You know, and that comes after Trump's $4.5 trillion tax cuts. We're giving them more tax cuts as if they needed it, right? And then the Federal Reserve Central Bank is pumping trillions more into the banking system and directly now into corporations. So what do you got, $4-5 trillion going to business owners and investors and corporations, and what, $500 billion they gave us here, you know, for 165 million workers and, as I said at the beginning, 45 million jobless right now. And that's running out. You see, that was only designed to be for 8 weeks. And now that's running out. The checks, people got the $1,200 check. They got an extension for a while. additional unemployment benefits. But now it's very clear the Republicans will not allow any further extension of that. No, we're not going to get any more. But, you know, watch the Republicans take care of their business friends. Yeah. Well, that's the kind of lopsided and, as you said, obvious. You know, the working class did not recover. At best, they were stagnant since 2008-09. And this Great Recession is far worse than the previous one. So we're coming into this thing without having fully recovered. And now, you know, the hammer's coming down twice as hard as it was before. And what do we have for solutions being proposed? Neither of these corporate party wings have any solution, you know? And as I said, the Democrats can't stop Trump. You know, I think Trump is still the odds-on favorite for winning. And as I said, if he loses, he's prepared to refuse to step down. They're already building the case. You know, political crisis coming. And the Democrats will prove themselves, I believe, to be even further inept in this election. And then, you know, I think it will become even clearer that we need something new here. As you know, Nick, I've been a longtime advocate of an independent political party, but one that occurs from the grassroots, not a bunch of intellectuals saying, oh, let's form a party. No, it's got to come from real people and real movements. And, you know, we've got real movements out there now. It's not that we don't have people in motion who want to change. We do. But they've got to come together. There's got to be regional conventions and a national convention of real people with real constituencies to form this new party. And hopefully we may be at the beginning of that with this development that you point out in, you know, our revolution group, the grassroots group here that was driving the campaign for Sanders. And I believe we do have Jerry Perez on now, don't we? Jerry, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Jack. Thanks for having me here.
Okay. Jerry, I believe if I intro you correctly here, you're a field director for the ORR Revolution Group in Los Angeles. Jerry is a 32-year-old former Marine vet, a Teamster, truck driver, small business owner. I mean, you know, you couldn't get anybody who represents the grassroots much more than that. Jerry, why don't you tell us what's going on in the OR group, our revolution group here, and why the L.A. Organization of the OR has decided to go independent?
Sure thing. So the straw that broke the camel's back was when Bernie Sanders dropped out a little while ago and endorsed Joe Biden. When he did this, I had woken up to a day where my phone was ringing nonstop. I had over 200 texts, and I was consoling a lot of disheartened and demotivated volunteers that were despairing because the person that we put all of our hopes, our money, our time into dropped out. All of the group universally felt betrayed, that someone that they looked up to, someone that they put all their efforts into and believed in, just dropped out and said, oh, go join with Biden. The man that does not represent you, does not want to help you, and is a molester.
Let me interrupt you briefly, Jerry. You know, that seemed to me an important juncture as well, the dropout. Wasn't he saying just a week before that we're going to fight all the way to the convention, we're going to contest all the primaries, and then all of a sudden he drops out and, you know, the other shoe falls within days and he endorses Biden. What do you make of that action by Sanders? Why would he be saying we're going to fight all the way and then immediately abruptly drops out? What's your take on what's happened there?
Well, you see, here where I come from, we call that lying. When you say one thing and you do another and you build everybody up to it. So what I would say is that he lied and went back on his word and dropped out and betrayed his base in doing so. Now, I'm not one for looking back. I accept reality for what it is and I adapt to it. So when he did drop out and I did see morale drop and we lost over 70% of our active volunteers. Everyone was not responding. Everyone didn't want to get involved anymore. So the people that did, our organizers that did stay, what we did is we sent out the survey and we said, do you still have trust and confidence in the Democratic Party to effectively represent you in the local, the state, and the federal level of government? Overwhelmingly, we had almost all of our members say they do not trust the Democratic Party to effectively represent them anymore. Just for all of, and some of the comments they said, just ongoing from 2016 to now, it's quite clear that they do not want to represent us. They feel they don't need us, and they actively suppress us. So this last election cycle, it was a shitstorm. I've never seen anything so rigged in my life. And the manners in which they tried to affect us at the local level here in California was also just despicable. They installed new voting machines. Alex Padilla, the person that manages our elections, it was seeming like he would try to alter the votes in some way. So one of our candidates, Maria Estrada, organized a group of protesters to go to his house in the middle of the night, and we reminded him that if he did do something creepy, we would come back in mass, along with our Democratic chair, our California Democratic chair, Rusty Hicks. And that's the kind of pressure that we needed to do to ensure we had a fair election. And fortunately, we gave Bernie Sanders our state. Our grassroots efforts and all our organizing across the state let the people know that Bernie Sanders was our choice. Now, after we got those results back, we asked them, okay, we have these options. We can continue to try to change the Democratic Party from within, or we can join a already created party that's like the Green Party, or we can clear the slate, start clean, and start a brand new party. So we sent out another poll, and over 72% of our base said, well, active base said that they wanted to start a new party. And so here we are. We reached out to Nick. We asked how we can get involved. His plan was solid. I brought it back to our group. They agreed. We announced. And now we're leading the charge, as California does. We're going to ensure that a new party is created. And my group has tasked me with getting this done, so I will not rest. This is my new life's mission. I will hit every state. I will go to any group that says they need assistance. And I will teach them how I organize using my Marine Corps method, and also modifying it to any and new better techniques that I learned from all of these other progressive groups and other groups that we continue talking to throughout the nation.
Is there anything you can share with us about what's happening similarly with other OR groups elsewhere in the U.S.?
Last time I checked, there were two OR Revolution groups that are having this discussion right now. They are polling their members. Nick, do you remember which groups those are? I got to pull it up really quick.
One second. One of them, yeah, we've seen a big response, and we're hearing that there are discussions going on in many OR Revolution chapters. One of them that's already going to poll their members is Broward County in Florida. And there's another one in Connecticut, Central Connecticut, OR Revolution. They are also going to poll their members. I believe those are the two that have contacted us and said that they're already going to do it. And then there are many others that want to have conversations with us, see what it would look like. And that's what we're in the process of doing.
What's the next step here in terms of organizationally forming the People's Party? I mean, are you guys planning some sort of a regional convention or anything, or is it at this point still discussions and laying out your program and your organizational structure? What can you share with us there, Nick and Jerry?
Oh, we have plans. All right, this summer we are planning a People's Convention in August to contrast with the corporate party Democratic National Convention, Republican National Convention, and it's going to be virtual just like theirs. And from that, we are going to move to getting ballot access and registering in all 50 states. as a party nationally, forming party committee, and also moving to a founding convention, moving to regional conventions like you described in 2021.
So you're planning where and whenever you can to actually run candidates here in the 2020 election under your banner. Am I correct?
No, not in 2020. Beginning in 2021 as we get ballot access.
Okay. All right. I was wondering how quickly you'd be able to do that, given all the obstacles there are to getting on ballots here, the way they've got it set up in this country. Okay, so you got a roadmap, in other words, of where you would like to go. What other organizations are you in discussion with who might want to, you know, jump on the bandwagon here? Or is it mostly, Nick, at this point, your party movement and the OR group in discussions?
There are many other movements that we've been working with. For example, the Four People's Campaign, with Reverend Barber, youth climate organizations like the Strike With Us Coalition. And those are groups that we have seen the transformation. We've been working with them for years, and we've seen the way that they've become, you know, originally it was kind of, there was hesitance on their part, but now there's a much greater openness to our message and recognition that we're representing a very legitimate and necessary political perspective at this time. And so it's bringing together organizations like those in a founding convention, in a people's convention this summer, that we intend to show that this is something that the movement is engaging in, and also that it's not just limited to, you know, those who could be described as progressive, but it is in fact a coalition, a new electoral coalition of working people from across the spectrum.
Yeah, and I would add, a lot of small business people who work their butts off, having been in small business myself at one point, are getting whacked pretty good too. You know, I would imagine you got some allies there, if you come up with a program that appeals to some of their interests as well. But let me ask you, have you had any indication from any bona fide unions of interest, in joining, or at least early discussion? I know, the unions aren't going to break here from the Democrats in this election cycle. But if the Democrats show themselves to be as inept as I think they will be here running Biden, there may be some change there in terms of support. Any discussions, you don't need to name them because that would put them on the spot maybe, any discussions going on with any unions? You know, I mean, some unions are very Latino-oriented, in the service sector, and I bet they're thinking about this because the Democrats really haven't done much for immigration reform. Any discussions going on, maybe, let me say?
We are in conversation with unions, including some of the ones that supported Bernie's campaign. And there are some that are supportive, including some major ones, hundreds of thousands of members.
Yeah, I would think, the Commercial Workers Union, I don't know about the leadership. There's a distinction between, obviously, local-level people and local-level unions and their leadership and the national leadership, which is tied to the apron strings of the Democratic Party. I don't see them changing much at any point, which is one of the – I've written about that, one of the big problems why the labor movement has decayed in so many areas is because it's relied too much on the Democratic Party to save it, which it isn't doing. That's part of the crisis of the union strategy, I believe, having been in unions myself quite a bit as a local president. I know how that game, we used to call it the Cope, Hope, and Dope program. You'll know what that means by cope and hope if you've been in the unions. Anyway, Well, that's a good sign. That's a good sign that there are at least discussions going on and there's some interest, you know, by labor. But, you know, I think it can't be just a labor union driven movement. Yeah, they got to be part of the game, but it's got to be a broader. Can't be just a pure labor party, right? That's not going to happen. But it's got to be something where, you know, workers, organizations, the unions are play a significant role in a broader movement. I agree with you there, right? Jerry, what's the next steps as far as you're concerned with OR down there? Are you just going to further organizational independent structure of some kind? What are you guys planning down there?
So before that, I just want to chime in on what you were saying before. During the last couple of days, I've been contacted by almost every type of person there is. I've been contacted by libertarians. I've been contacted by Republicans. I've been contacted by other veterans who heard my call. I've been contacted by almost every demographic we have here in California. I've talked with union members. I've talked with local community leaders. My phone has been ringing nonstop. So I've been talking to them. I've been letting them know that, yes, we are having this discussion. We are not dictating this. And so now that we have this sign-up form, I've given that to them, and we can start scheduling calls so where we have a real deeper discussion and start seeing if this is something they want to do together. But from all the majority of calls I've been getting is that they also share the sentiment that they do not trust the Democratic Party or the Republican Party to effectively represent them at the local, state, and federal level. Now, to go into the question you just asked, I'm very by the book and ensure that this meets success. So the first step that we're doing right now is identifying who wants to be a part of this and starting discussions with them. You don't want to jump the gun with this. You want to go ensure everything is going correctly, give everybody their space, don't push them into it, and let them make the decision on their own. We do not want to dictate their decision and ensure that they actually make this choice themselves and they want to do this. So right now, I'm actually talking with a group later today. I'm going to be answering some questions, and then I'm going to encourage them to discuss amongst their members if this is what they want. If they do not have trust in this established party to represent them, if there's no communication between them and the party, they are not represented. And they need to strike out, take positive control of their situation, and create a new entity that does represent them. So that when they do donate to that organization, they know that the funds going to that organization represent them and aren't going in the pockets of someone that would rather eat ice cream.
Have either of you thought about, I'm sure you have, what kind of program this new organization, this new political movement party, hopefully structure, organization structure. As I said, the organization question is paramount here today. Any of you talked or thought about what would be the main program objectives? In other words, political program, social program, economic program, objectives. What would you stand for in terms of economic or political change? Maybe you could just share some high-level points, Nick and Jerry, for listeners. You know, what would you try to achieve in this party other than, winning office, mobilizing people, not just electoral, I presume. But what would be the programmatic objectives?
I would say that,
Ron, Joe, Jerry, go ahead.
One thing that I personally would like to see from this party is education and ensuring that each group that we do create educates the community on civics, educates the community on common sense dealings. Because currently what our parties do, they have no real interaction with the community. It's just a lot of smiling goons out there, and they don't actually interact with the community. What I envisioned and what I'm going to be bringing to all these organizations once we come together is I would like to start a field organizer certification program in which we have trainers in each community actively teaching and training young people to get involved with their communities, identifying problems, thinking of solutions, how to solve these problems, and implementing those solutions. Training leaders, ensuring that we're communicating with members of the community, ensuring that those community members are healthy, are actually being taken care of, and also meeting prosperity. That's something that I feel both parties are lacking, and they do not do. That is something that I would like to see happen. I have talked with Nick about this, and I would love to present this to the rest of the groups. And we do plan on presenting this, and I would love modifying it to show up, to take in more ideas and really create a brand new program that would really train up and embolden these upcoming generations to take back our communities and ensure that we lead to a prosperous future. That's something that I would like to see.
Nick, how about you? What does it stand for? What are you trying eventually socially to achieve? You know, I mean, is it jobs? You have a jobs program, you have a tax program, you have a retirement program, you know, et cetera. You're going to have some program at some point that says this is what we stand for, as well as this is how we're going to go about trying to achieve it.
Right now, we are organizing with Bernie's platform. And we are doing so in a transitional basis before we get to a founding convention where the membership will decide the ultimate platform. And some of the priorities that we're organizing around are the basic economic priorities that are affecting all working people across the country. I mean, people are confronted day in and day out, even before this crisis, even before coronavirus, with medical bills that they cannot afford. I mean, the working class has not had a raise in the last 50 years. Wages have become stagnant while CEO and the 1% income and wealth has absolutely skyrocketed because it's being siphoned from them. So the cost of health care, getting Medicare for all, getting free public college, that should be a human right, education. FDR's Second Bill of Economic Human Rights, that is very much in the spirit of what we are organizing around now. In 1944, that long ago, you know, more than 70 years ago, FDR gave an address about the kind of world that he envisioned, the kind of country that he envisioned after the Second World War. And he envisioned a second Economic Bill of Human Rights where basic necessities were guaranteed to all, including food, water, health care, care for the elderly, Social Security, also leisure time, freedom from monopolies, and control by big business. Those are all things that we intend to achieve now in our program.
Okay. Both of you, where can our listeners go to find more about, you know, what's going on here and maybe join and start something in their area or whatever, you know, I mean, start doing something. You know, as I've said on the show, hell, we know about the crisis, the dimensions of the crisis. We can talk all day about how bad it is. The question is, what are we going to do about it? Let us know here, right here, where people can go. You know, you got a website, you got blog, you know, phone numbers, whatever. Both Jerry and Nick. Nick, where can folks, listeners, go to do something?
Come join us at peoplesparty.org, and you can sign up to volunteer, follower updates, make a contribution if you can afford it in this hard time, and also. Join our team as well. If you sign up to volunteer, we have a Slack group with more than 500 people where we are working towards these aims, organized in a decentralized way into different working groups. And we would love you to bring your skills to that working group and for you to become a part of that team, to those working groups. And so come and join us at peoplesparty.org.
Okay, that's your organizational website, I guess, right? Peoplesparty.org?
That's
okay.
Right.
Is there a phone number there if they want to do it the old way by phone to contact somebody to start something? Is that on your website as well?
If if you go onto our website, you will be able to find other contact information and ways to get in contact with us.
Okay, very, very good. How about you, Jerry? You know, if they want to, people in L.A. listen to this, if they want to get in touch with you or find out more about where you're going, you got a website yet or some other contact info?
Yeah, so our website is ourrevolutionla.com, and you can also check us out on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. It's ourrevolutionla.com. You can sign up on our website and also sign up to be an organizer with us with our sign-up form that we have on there. And I would like to say this to anyone that is listening. If you have given money or if you have dedicated your time to any kind of Democratic candidate and they have just abandoned you after the smoke is cleared, if they're no longer a part of your community, you need to be a part of this. It's time to effectively take control of your situation and ensure you are represented. Take action and correct these problems rather than relying on others. So that's the message I would like to say to everyone.
Yeah, and, you know, folks should realize that this is not just something that's going to go away here, the problems in November. In fact, you know, I've been saying it's going to get worse. It's going to get worse because not only is this not going to be a V-shaped recovery, this problem is going to go on jobs in particular for some time. It's worse than 2008-09, and it took us 7 years just to get back the level of jobs we had in 2007, you know, with that crisis. And this is multiple times worse. So these jobs aren't coming back. And overlaid on the cyclical problem we got here is this this avalanche coming called artificial intelligence, which is now going to be accelerated by business. What does this mean? Rather than getting too deep into it, it simply means that we're going to lose millions of jobs to what is software automation, artificial intelligence. Simple decision-making jobs are going to disappear. Including and concentrated in the service area where a lot of young folks have only been able to find work. Those jobs are going away. McKinsey Consultants last year came up with a study that said 30% of all the occupations are going to either have their hours reduced or disappear. You see, AI is all about eliminating simple decision jobs. And this crisis is going to be overlaid on top of the crisis that we have now because the, you know, the healthcare problem, as I said at the beginning, triple crisis, is not going away. It's going to be with us for some time. The economic problem is getting worse. And the political crisis on top of all this is going to intensify possibly to an unimaginable degree here come November, as the split within the corporate party of America's two wings fight intensifies even further. So we have a triple crisis, as I said in the beginning, never had such before, and it's going to continue in all its dimensions. So the point is, we better start planning and organizing and doing something about it, because the two wings of the corporate party of America are going to make a mess of everything, as they already have. And the only solution is going to be something independent that's going to set everything straight. But you're going to need a movement for that. And it seems to me we've got the rudiments of a movement. It's not that people don't feel the conditions are justifying something independent. They do. The conditions are there. They're going to get worse. And I just would advocate people get out and do something. And it seems to me, you know, maybe you guys are onto something here. Maybe there is something here that's the beginning of a solution to the organizational question. And, you know, I extend an invitation to both of you whenever you want to come on this show and tell us what's happening next, you know, please do get in touch with me. And especially if, you know, other OR groups somewhere come to the same conclusion you do, then please do. Okay, I'm getting the signal. We gotta wrap up here. Thanks very much, Nick and Jerry, for coming on and giving us an update of